Welcome to 43rd in Woodland, the intersection where family and science forge together. I'm Jared Hunter, class of 2016.
And I'm Sean Ahern, class of 2019. And we are your hosts, excited to bring you another episode for your personal and professional development.
Today on 43rd in Woodland, we sit down with Dr. Paul Katz, president of the University of the Sciences, to discuss his career path leading up to U-Sciences and the university's current efforts to address the ongoing COVID pandemic. With that, welcome, Dr. Katz.
Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Sean. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Cool. So I want us to kind of jump right in and get a sense of you as a person first. Sometimes university presidents can feel like ethereal beings and you know, we can't touch them necessarily, but want to get a sense of who you are as a person.
I appreciate that.
What made you want to follow a career path to pursue healthcare and science?
Well, Jared, it didn't actually start out that way. My dad was a physician, but he never really tried to push me, which I was forever appreciative of. So, you know, I originally thought I was going to be a marine biologist. You know, I like the beach and I like biology. And I said, hey, marine biology sounds perfect. And so I started in college. And then I got really interested in veterinary medicine. And I went into my senior year of college thinking about vet school or med school. And, you know, I finally settled on med school, although I think I could have been really happy in vet medicine too. So it didn't start out that way. It just kind of happened. And I'm most appreciative. My dad didn't push me at all. We tried to do the same thing with our girls either, just kind of let them go their own way.
No, that's great.
Yeah, that's awesome, especially just to figure out what your passion is, Dr. Katz. And like you said, that's a good segue because it doesn't look like your career path went into veterinary medicine. So we did a little bit of digging. Again, such an extensive career, getting your MD at Georgetown, doing a residency at University of Florida, and then becoming the clinical and medical lead for the NIH within allergy infectious diseases.
Yeah.
So we'll stop there because I know that's not the end of your career, but talk a little bit about those experiences.
So I knew I wanted to do internal medicine, and I looked around and I really liked the program at the University of Florida, separate and apart from the fact it was an hour and a half from either coast, but I really enjoyed the program there. And I started thinking about immunology and infectious diseases and that I wanted to do additional training with the eye of going into academic medicine. I envisioned myself as being at a medical school. So I looked around and I went to the NIH and I went to NIAID, Allergy and Infectious Diseases. And there I had the opportunity to work for 4 wonderful years with someone who has been all over the news recently. And that's Dr. Anthony Fauci. I got accepted to work with Tony. I was in his laboratory for 4 years.
Wow.
I did the clinical experiences with him and I did the research experience with him. And this was pre-HIV. And so I had just a fabulous time with him. He was one of the biggest influences on my career. A lot of what I gleaned from him had nothing to do about medicine or science or research. It had to do with being a professional and being a leader and being a hard worker, that sort of subtle things that you pick up on. So I am forever indebted to him. And I'm really proud of what he's doing right now. I think he's been a voice of reason at a time when we certainly could use more. Mm-hmm. So I really am most appreciative of the fact that he allowed me to work with him during that time. So it was a great experience and it really shaped me in many ways. You know, I then thought I was going to have a traditional career in academic medicine. I was going to teach and do research. And I got asked to go back to the University of Florida. So I joined the faculty there as a junior faculty member and did all of those things. I then got asked to come back to Georgetown to look at being the chief of rheumatology. And I will tell you guys, my career has been characterized by accepting jobs that I actually didn't know entirely how to do. And, you know, what I realized is, we have a tendency to mystify these jobs, make them more complex than they are. But, you know, I figured I'm really reasonably intelligent and I work hard, and so I can figure this out. So I went back to Georgetown and then spent the next 17 years there and got to do a number of different things. Got to eventually become chair of medicine. I became chief operating officer of the medical center. So I had just a wonderful, wonderful time there and forever cherish that. you know, it was a very important place to me. My dad went to med school there. I went to med school there.
Wow.
Our youngest daughter was in nursing school there. So it was a very important place for me, separate and apart from what I learned. You know, I'm not Catholic by any means, but I learned a lot from the Jesuits, great affection for the Jesuits and what they're about. And so that really shaped me. They are very interested in what they call cura personalis, and that's care of the whole. Mm-hmm. So not just focused on, you know, illness, but focused on individuals as human beings and all their various different dimensions. So I had a great time there. And so I then ultimately went down to Miami Beach. There's something here about the beach that's sort of consistent, because I was really interested in learning more about hospitals. And when I was at Georgetown as COO, I really got involved in that, and then had a great 6 years there. We lived on South Beach, which was a total out-of-body experience.
Yeah.
And had a great time there, an amazing, amazing place. I remember when we first got there, walking down Ocean Drive, where we initially lived was right on Ocean Drive, and seeing some signs at some of the bars that happy hour began at 10. And so, you know, so things didn't really get rolling on South Beach until about 1. But we had a great time there, and I then thought, you know, I really was interested in getting back to a med school. So I had the opportunity to become the first vice dean at the Commonwealth Medical College in Scranton, which is now Geisinger Commonwealth. I was employee number 8 there. It was an interesting experience going from South Beach to Scranton. You know, uh-huh. For anybody who has been in Scranton, it ain't South Beach.
Yeah. Nowhere close by the beach, to say the least.
Nowhere close by the beach. Well, the story I tell, before my wife and I moved up there in December, I called one of my colleagues and I said, hey, how you doing up there? She said, well, you know, it's 18 degrees. And I said, is that centigrade? Which, regrettably, it was not.
It was not, yeah.
It was not. So I had a great time there. And, you know, I felt very privileged to help start a med school. I mean, not many people have had that opportunity.
And yeah,
it was a great community, wonderful Joe Biden's hometown, great blue collar community, and really enjoyed that. This was a time back when there were a bunch of new med schools being formed. And I got visited by some people at what's now the Cooper Medical School of Rowan University. And I got asked to look at that job, and loved the mission, love being in Camden, which is where I got to know U Science.
Yeah. A super impressive string of different experiences that you've gone through and things that you've learned, I'm sure. I actually want to jump back really quick and just ask.
Sure.
Obviously, like you mentioned, Dr. Fauci has been a voice of reason for a lot of folks throughout the country right now. What are some of the nuggets of wisdom that you got from him that might love to get a peek inside that brain back then?
You know, it's interesting, Jared, because I don't think I really appreciated it at the time. Mm-hmm. Tony is not that much older than me, and he was pretty junior at the time. But mm-hmm. what I love and still love about Tony is his incredible work ethic, his focus, his really being a very caring individual. And there were a number of moments I had while I was there where Tony provided me enormous support. My dad needed heart surgery, and he was, you know, incredibly supportive and thoughtful about me. And Tony and I started running together, and I had been running since I was at the University of Florida. And so Tony started up, and we used to go running at lunchtime. And that's where I really got to know Tony, you know, because we weren't in our work mode or our sweat in Bethesda. You know, a lot of insights from him about his background and his absolute total commitment to making a difference. I mean, that's what's driven him. And I think the thing that I learned from Tony, among other things, was perseverance, passion, becoming committed to something for the greater good, giving back. And like I say, you know, that was a long time ago, and he hasn't changed. And I like to think that part of the reason I wound up who I am and where I am, for better or for worse, is because of those interactions. So when I look at him now, realizing the duress that he's been under and the fact that he's become, you know, really sort of the bell cow for science right now at this most challenging time, it really makes me very proud, and I'm very, feel very privileged to have spent that time with him.
Yeah, I can imagine. I lived in Camden for a few years while I was getting my master's degree. A lot of different issues going on in healthcare. I actually worked for the Camden Coalition, which was like a spinoff of Cooper. And I'm interested in getting your take on how healthcare has kind of evolved through Cooper in Camden.
You know, I appreciate that question, Jared. When I went to Camden, I didn't really know anything about Camden except what I read in the newspaper, which wasn't very good, you know.
Right, right.
You know, murder capital of the world, crime rate.
Right.
An enormous drug problem. But I was really struck by the people that lived in Camden. And, you know, most of the bad stuff that went on in Camden was not really by people who lived in Camden. You know, it was people taking the train into Camden. It was people coming over the bridge or coming from South Jersey. And they were really very good and decent people who had no pathway out. Schools were a mess. Crime was a mess. There were not jobs. And as you know, Jared, when people started to do well in Camden, they moved to Passyunk because Passyunk was the place to go. So it was really struggling. And I'm pleased that the med school made a difference. I think that a lot of good things happened. There's a huge turnover in the police force. I think the police force there at a time when, you know, we're all struggling with what the role of the police is really became.
Right.
I think a role model for many cities in terms of being public advocates and centered on the folks in that community. I think they brought jobs and industry to the city. And I think the focus on providing care to those who can't afford it is really very noble. Certainly of the many things that's happened during the pandemic, I think it's shown a really bright light on the healthcare inequity.
Right.
You look at who's getting COVID, who's dying of COVID. You guys know it as well as I do. It's people who don't have the means and don't have the ability to get better. So, you know, we really thought it was very important to focus on educating students to serve the underserved.
Yeah.
So that was, to me, was very, very motivating.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm proud we were able to get the thing launched that way.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, as you're talking about that, Dr. Katz, I just want to put in a little plug too for the Cooper Rowan Clinic. You probably are the one who initiated that, but we actually have a partnership with the University of Sciences, and as a student pharmacist, was able to go over there and help out. So just like what you were saying before, is helping the underserved was huge, especially within U Sciences. But that's a great segue too, because we're at Cooper Rowan Clinic. Yeah. You could have chose Miami Beach. You could have went back to good old Scranton if you really wanted to, but you chose U Sciences. So what made U Sciences so unique, especially after having such a robust career? You could have gone anywhere.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I've been on the receiving end of, in Scranton, some students from U Sciences, and I didn't really know anything about U Sciences. I didn't know anything about U Sciences. I didn't know anything about PCP. Everybody said, you know, U Sciences, oh yeah, they used to be PCP. I said, okay. I don't really know anything about PCP either. So when I got to Camden, we were designing the curriculum, and we felt it was very important to think about delivering care in teams, right? And, you know, it's now a team sport. It's no longer, you know, led by physicians. It's a team sport. So we felt it was really important for our students to start learning about each other and working together in teams. So we started thinking about this, and the first person I met for U Sciences was Dr. Kathy Poon.
Wow.
There were PCP students rotating at Cooper. And so we started talking with Kathy and with folks in PCP about creating this clinic, providing care for indigent individuals in the city, but run by students. And so we came up with the idea. I am really very proud that that's continued for 10 years. And one of the things that I find particularly rewarding is hearing our current PCP students talk about their time at that clinic, because that means a lot to me. And I really have great respect for Kathy. I have great respect for all the PCP faculty. But that clinic is something that I'm extraordinarily proud of, and I'm glad that it's continued to go on. You know, I'm just thinking it's 10 years or so. So it's been great.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think I have a lot of friends who also have gone through that clinic as well. Very interesting and very cool to know how it's got such a connection to U Sciences and even to you. I'm also wondering, you know, again, we're talking about this kind of long career that you had even leading up to U Sciences. Yeah. What were some of the differences or similarities that you saw in some of those experiences that you've had at U Sciences versus all these other places that you've been?
You know, as I looked at the position there, I really got a better feel for the place, because my understanding was really largely through the clinic. And, you know, I really liked what I saw. And I don't mean this in a demeaning way. Here's a focus factory, right? Here's a factory that has really one product. It's science and health professionals, right? Focused on one thing. And what a wonderful thing to be focused on, particularly at this time. And, you know, I came over and met a lot of people. I had the opportunity to meet some of the folks that came before you in PCP and from all the colleges, and really got excited about the possibilities. And, you know, as I said to you both before, you know, I've always gone into things with saying, well, I'm not sure exactly how this is going to work out, but what the heck, we'll give it a try and see what happens. And so I've had a wonderful time there. I mean, it's a challenging time in higher ed right now. Mm-hmm. You all know that from your time at the university. It's gotten more challenging with the pandemic. But of the places I've been as fond of U-Sciences as any. I have told many people repeatedly, and you guys may have heard this from me in the past, I have never seen students as focused as the U-Sciences students, and I'm including at all the medical schools I've been to. Mm. And, you know, I don't think that's necessarily all good. I think that U-Sciences students are a little too focused, a little too stressed out, but clearly, as you guys know very well, extraordinarily driven, and it's a privilege to be with the students and to be with our fabulous faculty. So it's really been a joy for me, and I feel happy to have had the opportunity. I think that we're doing some good things there. We're expanding. We're thinking about how we can evolve as higher ed evolves and as science and healthcare evolves. So I think it's been a lot of fun, and I work with some fabulous people, and it's one of those things where you look forward to working every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. And like you said, we were so focused, but as you probably know from our podcast, we had a series Proven Everywhere with people that did not have that traditional healthcare degree, and just how much we blossom outside of that one focus, which is just healthcare and science, which is great.
Fabulous.
And with that, what you're saying with being part of the university now, I think it's over 4 years now, Dr. Katz. I'm not four trying to years, age you here.
It was 4 years, September 1.
That's incredible. Congratulations. But I guess over that span of 4 years, I mean, there's probably multiple things that you've been proud of and you've seen a change with, especially for these alumni to hear that haven't been back to the university for a little while. What would you highlight?
I think there are lots of things, Sean. It's not quite where I'd like to see it, but I think it's getting there. That's being student-centered. You know, we have not always had a great history of that. You know, there's some reputational things that weren't always that attractive about the university. And, you know, we're starting to make some changes there. And I think a lot of that has to do with the students. I've always been struck by our students aren't as vocal as I think they should be. I think that's something that I've tried to encourage them to be. But it's been extraordinarily rewarding to me. Of all the things I do, the time I get to spend with the students is the best. Mm-hmm. And it reminds us why we're there. It recenters us. And so that's been a great joy for me. So that's the kinds of things I've been thinking about. I think that change is slow in higher ed. It's not like big business. We do things with a stroke of a pen, but I think we're evolving in a good way. I remain extraordinarily proud of our student outcomes, which I think are unparalleled. I also think one of the things that you can't measure, I've been struck by, is that our grads are just good humans. You know, they're just good people. And maybe part of that's because they chose the careers they did. But I think they're caring and good people. And I'm particularly proud to see that, you know, among our grads.
I want to touch on something that you mentioned earlier, which I think is interesting. Maybe not a lot of people in your position might say, but so you mentioned that you would want to see students being more vocal.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really interesting comment. I mean, I don't know if you remember, it had to be probably just around the time you started, and I probably should apologize in hindsight, but I remember you had a town hall very early on as you started, and there were some big changes happening at the university.
Yeah.
And I had asked a question about that very same thing, you know, how are students being more incorporated in decision-making at the university? And even now, you know, we have, like you mentioned earlier, you've got public safety and police brutality becoming a really big emerging conversation, Black Lives Matter movement, and you know, just social movements in general. So could you just touch on that a little bit more about what your thinking is behind that comment?
Yeah, I think, Jared, it's a good point. This is where I think we talk about our students being so focused, right? And part of our responsibility at the university is to provide a structure, provide support for our students to grow beyond just the profession they choose to be in. You know, I think we need to help them become citizens of the world, right? And so when I got there, I was talking about the students, and the biggest protest occurred when somebody tried to move Lyndon Neal's cart, right? So there were protests, you know, people were taking it to the street, and I was thinking, well, I mean, it's noble. I mean, we all love Lyndon Neal, but, you know, what about talking about what's going on in the world? How about really, as future leaders, really getting engaged in that and trying to make a difference? And so I regret that our students aren't as political and as outspoken as I wish they would be. And, you know, when I tell people that from at other institutions, they go, what are you, crazy?
Yeah.
Just tell them to behave and be good. But right. I think that becoming responsible citizens and knowledgeable and trying to make an impact is important. And I think, Jared, there was a lot of things going on in racism long before George Floyd was murdered.
Sure.
And, you know, I grew up during that time of the freedom marches and that. And we've come some distance, but not that far. And when you look at some of the major movements that have occurred in this country, whether it was resistance to the Vietnam War, you know, those began on college campuses. I mean, that's where those things started.
Right.
And that, I think, is where the epicenter of change needs to occur. And it needs to occur because the people at those colleges and universities are going to be shaping the future.
Right.
And look, I know our curricula are packed with things, but sometimes I think it might be more important to think about matters around social justice and equity than memorizing the doses of antibiotics that you can pull up off your iPhone.
Right. No, that makes perfect sense. And thank you for kind of fleshing that out. That's amazing. So again, we're talking about the changing times and the challenges that universities have been facing. Obviously, the COVID pandemic has been a huge hurdle that we're all trying to figure out how we climb together. And so the university has been taking a really strong approach and effort to addressing the concerns, not even just in a general sense, but even more so, like you said, very student-centered.
Yeah.
Students are coming back to campus, virtual setups. What has that effort been like on your end, being able to speak to how the university is approaching that?
It's interesting to think back. It wasn't that many months ago, you know?
Yeah.
And I think everybody had to pivot very quickly. We felt we had to maintain two goals. One was to try to keep everybody healthy. And the second goal was to try to deliver the great educational experience. Mm-hmm. And I think we've done pretty well with those. The faculty pivoted remarkably in a very short period of time. And our students pivoted remarkably too. I mean, what a sea change for them from being in class to being at home and learning online. And so I think the way in which our folks approached that was really, to me, extraordinarily inspiring. And, you know, a lot of people put a lot of time and effort in that. And I can't thank them all enough for what they did. And then lo and behold, we had to decide, okay, well, you know, now what happens in the fall, right? Mm-hmm. So it was planning for multiple contingencies, you know, trying to think what to do. And, you know, do we go back? Do we not go back? And all of that. And so, you know, I think we very much heard from most of our students, including the incoming students, that they wanted to be on campus, right? I mean, first of all, they're sick of being in mom's basement.
Right.
You know, for those high school incoming students, the high school seniors had a lousy spring semester. Mm-hmm. And part of being at college is being at college, right? Right? We wanted to do that, but obviously to be safe. And so we got a lot of guidance. We had to provide plans to the city. We had to work with the state. We had to work on our clinical education experiences that were not only in-state, but out of state. And we're now in week 3 of classes, and knock on wood, we've done great. And, you know, there are only 3 of us in the city that have students live and in class, and it's us, and it's St. Joe's, and it's the Philly U students that are part of Jefferson.
Right.
I think that's remarkable.
Yeah.
And, you know, our students, as I mentioned before, you guys, you were them. You know our students. They're very focused. Not only do they want to be on campus, you know, they want to continue to advance the ball in their careers. And so has everybody been 100% compliant? No. but it hasn't been very many. And we put a stake in the ground. And the stake was, if you guys want to be here and we want to be here, we're all in this together. So two and almost 3 weeks into this of classes, we've done great. You know, we've got 7 weeks now before Thanksgiving when everybody goes home and does exams. But, you know, I think it's been a wonderful experience. I couldn't be prouder of everybody at the university. And so, you know, hats off to all of our students who've been extraordinarily compliant. And look, I get it. You know, I didn't have the best judgment when I was between 18 and 22. I'm not sure how compliant I would have been. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's tough, and you guys know that. But yeah. I think they've really stepped up.
Yeah. Sounds like a great 3 weeks so far. And so even though it has been 3 weeks, has there been any, I guess, quick lessons learned?
That's a great question, Sean. I think the thing that we appreciate is that, you know, this is still tough on everybody. You know, it's tough on our faculty and staff who are caregivers and have kids at home. It's tough on our faculty and staff who have family members who are unemployed. It's tough on our students who find themselves in the same predicament. And, you know, I worry about social isolation. I worry about their personal health and wellness. And we spend a lot of time this week talking about that. What are the things that we can do to make people focus on taking care of themselves, to not spending as much time focused on all the bad things, but really thinking about what they can do together. And, you know, I know that's tough to do, but I feel we have an obligation to try to frame some of those opportunities, you know, for everyone, because it's tough on everybody. I mean, anybody that tells you differently is not telling you the truth.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, you know, you take our curricula, which are tough, and you layer this stuff on top of it. That's a lot. And thinking about, you know, our students away from home and thinking about their parents and families and concerns for them. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal. So I think we're all trying to be kinder and gentler to each other. And really, we're all in this thing together. Either we'll do well together or we'll do poorly together. Mm-hmm. So trying to keep our eye on the ball here, particularly given all of the uncertainty. I mean, that's the thing that's so challenging. It's like you can't say, hey, everybody, don't worry, you know, December 31st is coming and next semester is going to be fabulous. Well, you know, I hope it is, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
So trying to stay flexible. You know, there's always some good that comes out of stuff like this. And I do think that among the things that are good that will come out of this is, from a curricular standpoint, people have had to learn and teach online. I think that's good because that's what everybody's going to be dealing with. For an institution that's tried to work on its culture, I think this is drawing everybody together. You know, We're inextricably linked here.
Yeah.
I think that's been very positive. Being flexible and comfortable with ambiguity, to the extent you can be comfortable with ambiguity, have all been important things. When we look back at this and think about how horrible it was and the extraordinary toll it took on people, in addition to all the deaths, extraordinary economic and personal toll. You know, I think that there's some things out of it that will have had an impact on people in a positive way. You know, I think back to, 9/11, and everybody was a little nicer to each other. This is a very challenging time, separate and apart from COVID, as you know, whether it's Black Lives Matter, whether it's social justice and equity, whether it's chaos around our elections. Mm-hmm. You know, these are all stressful things. And the more we can stay flexible and adapt to them as a community, I think the better off we'll be.
Yeah. And I'm glad you keep bringing up that sense of community. And even just to go back to that overarching theme, I think it's incredible for a president to say of having that voice, especially for students. So Even with the pandemic, but everything else you just mentioned, as you probably know, students probably do know some of the resources available, but would you like to share any of those resources where students can present that voice?
I appreciate that. So, you know, certainly the folks in student affairs have a lot of resources available. And, you know, one of the things I've been struck by is, you know, our students are not as willing to ask for help as they should be. And I think some of that's cultural. Some of that is because they're worried about their future and what the impact is that going to have. But we're all in this together, and I really encourage them to do that. We do the same for our faculty and staff. And I think it's time to raise your hand if you're not feeling good. And if you're doing okay, look at somebody who may not be doing okay and help support them and get them what they need. So as scientists and caregivers, presumably everyone's interested in making a contribution to humanity. And what better way to do it than with your coworker, your fellow students, you know, the folks in your residence hall. It's a great learning laboratory, and it's just the right and decent thing to do.
So obviously whole podcast has really kind of been born out of a desire to engage more with alumni in general, but young alumni specifically, and just want to get your sense of what do you think right now an alumni's role has been, or what does that look like in terms of the university's engagement to get the alumni involved with the things that the university has been doing?
Yeah, Jared, I don't think in the past we did a very good job of staying connected with our alums. You know, when I came to university, we realized that, you know, most of the addresses we had for our alums were incorrect. We were sending letters to the parents of students who graduated in 1980 because that's the last letter we had.
Right.
So we haven't stayed connected. I think we've not done that. I think that's getting better. And, you know, I think when you come to our university, students should expect that there's a commitment that will be part of your lives from then on. And how can we help you? How can we keep you connected? Mm-hmm. And conversely, you know, how can we get our alums involved in what's going on campus now? I mean, the most powerful conversations our students have, and you both remember this from your days, is when they hear from people who went before them.
Yeah.
When they see what they accomplished, you know, they went through what our students go through and how they wound up and the contributions they made. And separate and apart from money, which particularly our young alums are not in a position to do, you know, the opportunity to stay connected and give back in different ways, I hope will continue. And we're trying to embed that in our current students so when they leave, hopefully more satisfied than they may have been in the past. Mm-hmm. That they'll think about those connections and giving back in those ways. And I've been some places where, you know, I've spent most of my career and education at Georgetown, and they really developed that sense of community and continuity. Mm-hmm. That's something that we need to try to aspire to do, and I think we can do it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's a great outlook to be looking at, Dr. Katz. And with that, we really appreciate your time so much. But as you know, we can't let you go yet because we have one final question for you. Even though you're not an alum of the university, I think being president makes you more of a U Sciences bred and born than us. And so with that, during your time at U Sciences, I would love to ask like what your favorite memory has been so far.
I'm glad you didn't ask me what my least favorite memory was. But I'll tell you, I was thinking about that. There have been a lot, and I don't say that to be trite. But I tell you, what was probably, and I think still remains, the best memory for me, because it was my first experience in this at U Sciences, was the 2017 commencement, which was my first commencement. And so, you know, I hadn't been in Leocurus, I hadn't presided over one of that. But the joy that I saw in our students and their families made me say to myself, this is why we do this. Mm-hmm. You know, let us not forget that that's the reason we're here. Yeah. And that can get lost in the day-to-day. So I cherish that moment. I regret that we weren't able to do that this spring. But to me, that brings it all home. And that's a time when we're all family. And to me, those have been the best moments. Those around when we get a chance to celebrate, despite the bullhorns.
Love the bullhorns. Come on now. Yeah, got to have the bullhorns at a graduation. Yeah,
shaking 450 hands is not that easy, okay?
I couldn't imagine being you. I'm glad. I am not.
Yeah, seriously. Well, again, Dr. Katz, we really want to thank you for your time to speak with us and share all of your experience.
My pleasure.
We're really hopeful that everybody that's listening definitely learned something and hopefully, you know, connects and really, again, to that idea of developing community and what U Sciences is doing moving forward.
So I appreciate that. And I encourage all of your listeners to stay connected.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks again to Dr. Katz for joining us for such an amazing discussion. This was a really refreshing conversation to have with someone in his position as university president, encouraging students to be more vocal and realize their potential as both healthcare leaders and all around great people.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And just as a disclaimer, this episode was recorded in mid-September. And so if any university policies have changed as a result of the ongoing pandemic, we just want to make it clear that no false statements were made at that time.
And as we've been encouraging before, if you haven't done so already, sign up for U-Sciences Nexus at nexus.usciences.edu. It's a new virtual platform just for U-Sciences alumni to connect professionally and personally, and it is an amazing resource for anyone looking to build new relationships, find mentors or jobs, or just stay connected to old friends and faculty. Mm-hmm.
And also be on the lookout for our upcoming episode with the current president and secretary of the U-Sciences Black Student Union to discuss continuing the movement on racial and social injustice. We're really excited to follow up this October episode and put into action some of Dr. Katz's encouragement to have more open conversations. Also, be on the lookout for my Instagram takeover on November 11th.
Thanks again for listening, and talk soon.